Deshana on the 18th of July, 1979. It is not possible for a practitioner who has transcended dukkha not to have encountered questions and problems which he must investigate, analyze, and solve. It is not possible to tread on the path without running into any questions. This is only with the exception of Kippa Pinya, those who can realize quickly. But for the ordinary practitioner, there must be questions and problems which he will have to analyze, probe into, and solve. He will have to figure them out in many and various ways. His mind will have to be turning like the Dhammajaka, the wheel of Dhamma. Then this is possible. When one has stepped into the realm of Panya, then this is the way it has to be. With the development of Samadhi, one must depend on Sati to control and master the citta. When there is no Sati, the citta will begin to conceive and think. The conceptions of the citta are the pictures that deceive oneself. They make one obsessed and deluded with them, although they are just shadows. The real producer or creator of these pictures is within the citta, but the shadows go outside and fool us. Then we become obsessed with these shadows. This is the way with every practitioner. If the practitioner does not know about these things, then his citta will not be able to find any calm. He has to be observant and watchful of his citta. If one has sati, then when one begins to concoct, then one will be able to feel that there is something pushing out before this concoction can come about. But one doesn't know this because it only comes out at the times when one is absent-minded. During the time that we do not have any mindfulness, then however it concocts, we will not know. We only realize it after this concoction and conception has come about. We then become deluded with this conception, which is merely a shadow. All of these conceptions of the various kinds of affairs and business, about this and about that, comes about due to the concoction of sankhara that continuously conceives up the various stories. It keeps on thinking without end, and we become deluded with these shadows. And the building up of the various kinds of business and affairs from them. We think that we are sitting in bhavana, but really, we are just being deluded with our aramana. For we are not sitting watching at the point where the aramana are created, and where the various concepts and stories come about. Sati is not found at that point. So how can the citta find any calm? You must get to understand this point very well. This is the way it really is, and it happened to me, so I already know about it. If I didn't know, how could I talk about it? At the level of developing calm, we must focus at the point where concocting begins. This concocting is really just disturbances and the things that incite us. Sati is the factor that takes notice of things. It should be established with the citta, so that it can take cognizance of the concocting of the citta and the thinking. One must not speculate or theorize as if the world doesn't exist. One should merely be aware right at that point. All there is then is just the knowingness that is being focused right at that point. There is only the attention to see what the citta is concocting about. One should be concentrating at that point. If one is doing the parigama, then one should be only aware of the parigama object. One just keeps on concocting up the parigama object. This kind of sankhara is not samudaya, for this is the magga. There is a difference between them, because this kind of concocting is not for the building up of restlessness and agitation, but it is for the sake of calm. It is used to curb the various kinds of trains of thoughts and associations of ideas, which lead one to become restless and agitated. Dhamma doesn't make one become restless and agitated, but the aramana of the world can make people upset and worked up. When the citta thinks in the way of the world and samsara, then this becomes samudaya. No matter how much it thinks, it will never come to an end, and it will never be satiated. It will keep on thinking and concocting, and it will keep on deceiving oneself. It will constantly keep on deceiving one, both day and night, without imparting one any benefit at all. We are intent on seeking for profit and benefit, so we must therefore firmly establish our sati. We have to concentrate our attention right at that point. If we are repeating the parigama object, then we should be solely aware of that object. This is the state of developing calm, and this is the way that we must do it. The one who has some calm must then begin to think of the various techniques of panya. By taking the parts of the body as the investigation, there are the 32 parts of the body, and this is the aspect of rupa. On the aspect of vedana, there is sukha, dukkha, and neutral, both that of the heart and that of the body. We must do it in whichever way we think can become panya. When the citta calms down, that is when the kilesas calm down. This is when the kilesas converge within. The citta can then come to calm, for it is not seeking or hankering after this or that thing. Like an ordinary citta, which cannot come up with any calm. Once the citta has attained to calm, then this calm can become a basis or a foundation. It will provide one with enough room to breathe. It will allow one some room to maneuver, so that one can come up with some ease and comfort. When there is no calm, then there is restlessness and agitation. One is constantly disturbing oneself with the various kinds of affairs and the various kinds of business. One just keeps on feeding oneself with poisons. One keeps feeding this poisons into the heart. And the result that we have to experience is dukkha or hardship mixed with worries and anxiety, perturbation and nervousness. One just constantly keeps feeding oneself with these poisons. But when the citta has gained some calm, then it will be cool. All of these trains of thoughts will all steadily fade away. When we know that such is the way, then we must keep on developing our sati. When we have gained enough calm, and when the time to investigate with panya is appropriate, then we must investigate. We can use the external things as the object of our investigation. This can be done, as I have previously explained. This is not wrong. It can be either a form of a man, or a woman, or an animal, or any people. Both the external and internal forms can be compared, because they are similar. They are similar in the aspect of filth, particular, or in the aspect of anicjang, impermanence, or the dissolution of the body, or death, or the state of change. This is true with everyone's body. The citta ceaselessly revolves, turning around in its work of investigation and contemplation, for this is panya. Sati must be firm. Sati is comparable to household medicines. One cannot be without sati. In all forms of work, sati must always be there. The work of samatha, which is calm, must depend on sati in order that one can establish this calm. In the work of vipassana, there must also be sati, for one will then be able to investigate efficiently and proficiently, and will be able to understand very clearly. If there is no sati, then it will turn into sanya. In the beginning stages, panya will generally tend to be sanya. This is because we haven't yet come across the principle of cause and effect, enough to make our hearts to become impressed, to become delighted and satisfied with the fruits of our exertion that will have already appeared, and to be happily looking forward to the fruits that one has not yet come across, which one will be seeking for with one's strenuous exertion, and one's striving, and one's panya. When one hasn't yet experienced this kind of result, then panya will usually become sanya. We therefore have to control with sati, with whatever object that we are investigating. We must really concentrate on doing the work of analysis, of contemplating and differentiating into the nature of that object. We have to do it with intention, so that we can gradually come to see what it is about. When we get to know the tricks of uprooting the kilesas, then the result will appear within our heart. Thereafter, sanya will steadily become panya, until it will become entirely panya, and then sanya will not be able to infiltrate into it at all. Once we get to that stage, then there will be no problem. It is rather difficult in the beginning stage of our investigation. when we want to develop either calm or panya. But we should not take this hardship as the obstacle blocking our way. The reason why our work does not go on at full capacity is because of our fear of difficulty. We then become weak and lazy, and we then cannot come up with anything. All that is fully within our hearts is just the aramana of the world. By now we should be able to see the harm of it. We have been mingling with the world from our childhood days. We should now see the harm of the sanya aramana that deal with the world. We are now trying to emancipate ourselves by way of practice. So we should be putting all of our effort into the work of exertion. Our exertion will be totally void if there is no sati. Sati is extremely vital in the practice of walking jhankama and sitting in samadhi bhavana. In any way of our bhavana practice, there must be sati. In our sitting position, whether we are developing calm or panya, there must be sati. Sati must be the master that watches over and controls the work. This is the way to practice. If there is no sati, then it is useless. For those practitioners who cannot come across any result, this is probably because they practice without having any sati, because they are weak in their sati. And what is the reason for all this weakness? It is because there is not enough effort being put in for the developing of sati. This kind of effort is not being continuously put forth. Sati can be developed into a very high proficiency and efficiency, similar to panya. Developing panya in the beginning stages is an uphill struggle, and this is because we haven't yet experienced the results of this panya. When we steadily come across the fruits of panya, then panya will increase of itself, and then we will become attracted to and intent on the work of investigation, until we become totally engrossed and absorbed in the work of contemplation and analysis. This is described as one of the higher sanyojanas, or fetters, that of uttacca. This is being excessively engrossed in the work of investigation. This is one form of sanyojana. This is because it is not within the bounds of propriety. Uttacca is the obsession of the citta in ceaselessly probing and exploring. This uttacca is not the same uttacca that is found within the five mental hindrances, which are in all ordinary people. They are two different worlds. This uttacca is not concerned or involved with anything in the world of samsara. It is not involved with any external thing, for it is only involved within the realm of the khandhas. It is turning around relentlessly with panya, investigating in the light of the tilakana, the arising and ceasing of one's thinking process. This is how it can be developed into a very high degree of intensity. Sati can be very highly developed, and it is the same way with panya. I had never imagined before that sati and panya could be turning around so incessantly like that. From the first moment that one gets up from sleeping, I had never speculated about this before. and I had never experienced it before. But it had already happened. From the first moment of getting up, from sleep, until the last moment, before going to sleep again, I was never off guard or absent-minded. Listen to that. If sati is not highly competent and efficient, how is it that one never becomes off guard or absent-minded? One doesn't even have to be on one's guard, and one doesn't have to prevent oneself from being absent-minded. For this kind of sati is automatic. So how then can one ever be off guard? Once one has attained to the level of automatic sati and panya, then that is how it will be. During the time of the Lord Buddha, this is called Mahasati and Mahapanya. Thanajanman always exhorted us to develop our sati, to become Mahasati, and to develop panya, to become Mahapanya. How else can one catch up with the tricks of the kilesas? The kilesas have amassed and accumulated themselves within the heart for kalpas and kalpas, for so many lives and existences, that one is not able to find any Dhamma within one's heart. Instead, it is entirely the kilesas. They are full in the heart, and they are very strong and powerful. If we don't have enough sati and panya, how then can we suppress and master the kilesas? It is therefore necessary to build up and accumulate sati and panya, so that there will be enough of them to be more powerful and capable of surpassing the kilesas. Once the strength of sati and panya is greater than the kilesas, then no kind of kilesas will be able to outdo and prevail over sati and panya. They will all be totally destroyed. This was what Thanajanman said. Thanajanman exhorted us in a very powerful and forceful way. For he belonged to the lineage of great masters. He was bold and courageous, quick and efficient. When he spoke, he was very straightforward, as he was very honest and sincere, without being devious or deceitful. But with the kilesas, he was very clever. Whatever kind of duplicity the kilesas displayed, he would know how to outwit them, using his own techniques and skill. We are the practitioners, so we must therefore also follow his way. We have to really try to see the greatest and the most supreme treasure within the citta. But right now, at this time, the citta is completely surrounded by the kilesas, to the extent that we are not able to see what the real citta is. All we can see is just the kilesas. Every manifestation, every form of thinking and concocting, all go in the way of the kilesas. There isn't a single moment when these things go in the way of Dhamma. When the kilesas are so densely concentrated, then the story will always be about the kilesas. All of these concoctions and thinking processes that emerge from the heart all go in the way of the kilesas, for we still haven't got any sati and panya. It is for this reason that we have to develop sati and panya. We have to do this seriously and earnestly, so that we can match the strength of the kilesas. The kilesas will then not be able to withstand us. Once we constantly train and develop our sati, and nourish and look after it, then it will steadily grow and become efficient and proficient. As far as Panya is concerned, don't ever think that it will come about by itself, without devising the means of developing it. Like thinking and contemplating, regardless of what kind of samadhi one might have attained to. There are a lot of people that have the wrong understanding concerning this aspect among those in the circle of practice. In some of the texts, it says that once one has samadhi, then panya will come about by itself. The crux of the matter here concerns the understanding that panya will come about by itself once one has attained samadhi. How can panya arise by itself? I am also a practitioner, and when I have experienced something clearly within myself, how can anybody else deceive me about it? How many years was I addicted and immersed in samadhi? It got to the extent that Than Ajahn Mun had to really goad me and push me and drive me out of samadhi. Thereafter, I had to begin to tread on the path of panya by doing investigation and contemplation. The citta was ready to support panya. This is when the firmness and stability of the citta is full and sufficient due to the state of samadhi. It is no longer hungry or hankering for anything. It is fully contented within its own state of calm. Though one might be doing some thinking and concocting, the basis of coolness and calm never fades away. It was a very strong and firm foundation. The citta had now attained to the perfect state of samadhi. But did panya arise by itself? It never happened. As soon as I began to do my sitting practice and establish calm by restraining the citta from thinking and concocting, it was only a few minutes until I entered into the state of calm. This was due to skill and proficiency. Once the citta had entered into calm, then all that there was just the single state of knowingness. It is all alone by itself. All there was just this knowingness. And in the end, I became addicted to this state and construed it to be Nibbana. I was then attached to that state. It didn't do me much good. I did not know what was hidden and so deeply embedded within that state of knowingness. And I did not give it any thought. I did not know what it was involved with. And I could not see this because there was no panya. But when I began to investigate and tread on the path of panya, then I began to see this thing and that thing. And I became aroused and interested by the various aspects of Dhamma. I then kept on following my interest and kept on investigating. The kilesas then steadily disappeared. I began to see things in a very different light. I began to see the value of panya. Panya then kept on moving forward steadily, and the more one came to see the results, the more one became motivated in the work of exertion and the work of investigation and analysis. In the end, one turns around and blames samadhi, for it is like lying down like a dead person without coming up with anything useful. Then this would not be within the bounds of propriety. You practitioners have to realize that regardless of how high one's attainment of samadhi is, if one doesn't begin to use panya so that one develops it, then panya will never arise. If one doesn't coerce oneself to investigate and contemplate, then panya will never arise by itself. If panya were to arise by itself, then someone who had attained to the state of perfect samadhi would find panya arising as a consequence of that. But panya does not appear. If one develops samadhi, one can only gain samadhi. If one develops calm, one only gains calm. When one wants to develop in the way of vipassana, for true knowledge and insight, then one must investigate. Then it will become vipassana. This is the penetrative realization. This is the literal translation of the word vipassana. It is the realization with panya. One must not be complacent and remain idle. Whatever state of calm one is in, that particular state of calm is suitable for a particular state of panya. This is the correct and suitable way for the practitioner, and it will not waste one's time. One will not have to be in doubt by wondering whether one is doing this correctly or not. Once one has a teacher to point out the way, then all one has to do is to follow his instructions. You should be able to tread on the path with ease, because there is no doubt. The one who gives this discourse has no doubt. I am speaking truthfully. I have no doubt in my teaching of my fellow practitioners, because I have clearly experienced all these things, either in the causal aspect or the resultant aspect. For instance, I related about the first moment of getting up, and sati and panya would then relentlessly and ceaselessly turn around in the investigation for the purpose of uprooting the kilesas, using the various methods and techniques that are suitable for each different kind of kilesa, until the time I went to sleep. I reviewed myself to see if there was a single instant when I was off my guard from the moment I got up. All I could see was the work that was turning around ceaselessly until the time I went to sleep. There wasn't a single instant that I was absent-minded. Now listen to that. This actually happened, and that is why I have told you about it. This doesn't mean that all of you should take this up as your basis of speculation and conjecture, your sanya aramana, or that you have to copy it identically. This is not the way. It is only a method in the way of practice that one can follow. Though it might not be identical, at least it should be in the manner of a follower of a teacher. What has been said here is based on the truth principle and the truth of sati and panya that were engaged in the uphill struggle. but were able to establish themselves eventually. They turn around ceaselessly without ever being of God, and constantly eliminated the various kinds of kilesas. Once sati and panya are being consistently and continuously developed, then this is the way it will be. You must really strive in your search and your endeavor. The supernatural things are found within the citta. It is this very citta that is wonderful and marvelous. At this time, the citta is worthless, base, and rubbishy. This is because the kilesas, which are low and mean, are embracing the citta. The citta thus becomes something without any value. It is necessary to wash these things away with one's diligent effort. One must apply all the means and techniques of panya that one has. One must not solely wait for one's teacher to hand it out. The various techniques of panya must come out of one's resourcefulness. We can think and come up with these methods. Once we have come up with our own techniques, they will never be exhausted. Our teacher shows us the way, but we have to expand it and apply it to fit our practice. Then it will be our true and genuine possession. If we want to investigate the body in the light of asupa, repulsiveness, then we must really do it. Asupa is the business of panya. We have to unravel and uncloak it. We have to go on a gamatana sightseeing trip, going down from the top, at the head to the feet, and then going back up to the head again. Then we have to go around the body. It is dajja pariyanto, wrapped around with skin. What is being wrapped by this skin? It is the mass of particula, filthiness, and impurity. The skin itself is also particula, and it is only the surface of the skin that is good enough to look at. Then there is the sweat and dirt, which we constantly have to wash off and scrub off. This filth permeates out from the inner part of the body. We always have to wash it every day. What is it really like? We have to really take a good look at it. One who investigates the body is inclined to do the body contemplation, and who constantly analyzes and differentiates the body and all its parts with panya. Doing this consistently and constantly is the one who will progress very rapidly. One has to take this as the fateful and crucial battleground. Kaya kata sati, the mindfulness of body, is absolutely vital. As long as the citta still clings to the flesh and to the body, then the body is still the crucial object of investigation. This must be until one can completely see the nature of this body with panya. When one wants to establish calm, then one should not be concerned with panya. One has to act as if one has never done any thinking before. One should be solely concentrated in the work of developing calm. they should not get into each other's way. When one wants to establish calm in the heart, when one wants to rest the heart in the state of calm, so that the heart can be at ease and comfort, and free from worries and confusion, one must be only mindful and concentrated in the development of calm, without being concerned with the investigation of panya. Once the citta has rested in calm, and we can clearly experience this, and the citta has withdrawn from that state and is ready for the work of investigation, then we must tread on the path of panya. Let us probe and explore until this whole physical universe is shaken. But we must not be concerned or involved with samadhi while doing the investigation with panya either. This is the correct way of doing it. In any particular work that we are doing, we have to be really earnest and concentrated on doing just that particular type of work. Like directing water to flow through just one channel. It can be very forceful and powerful. If we are concerned with panya while doing samadhi, and concerned with samadhi while investigating with panya, then we will become confused and sidetracked, jumping back and forth. We cannot progress in this way, for this is being lackadaisical, lacking in resolve and earnestness. We have to be really earnest as practitioners. When we are walking jhankama, we should not be thinking about anything else. It must be as if the world is not there. There should only be the knowingness and the thing that we are involved with. The thing that we are involved with is the thing found within ourselves, and the aramana that we are using as the object of our investigation, or as our parikama object. These are the things that we should focus our attention on. We should not think about the world. The world will not disappear. All there is to this world is just birth and death, that piles one on top of another. And this has always been so. It will not run away. The affairs of this world are about birth and death, about dissolution and parting. This is the way it will always be. So why should we have any concern for it? The body that we take for a walk, stand up, put to sleep, discharge excrement from, and constantly feed, has been changing all the time, until it has become what it is now. Before, it was an infant that just came out of the womb of the mother. It was like that then, but now it has grown up to be as it is now. What is this growth really about? It is about anicjang, dukkhang, and anatta, which all accompany this growth. How can we find any goodness or value from the growth of this bodily formation if we don't look for goodness from our sati and panya? If our sati and panya do not grow, develop, and excel, then we will not be able to find a way of emancipating ourselves. We will just be holding to this formation, only to sink and die with it. We will then take up a new formation, so that can be the object of birth aging, illness, and death, and the mass of dukkha. We will be doing this without end for kalpas and kalpas, and we will never come to an end of it. One who wants to cut off lives and existences must investigate and analyze. He must be very intent with his exertion. If it is dukkha, let it be dukkha. Nobody that is born in this world can experience only happiness from the first day of birth to the last day of life. There is always happiness and suffering mixed together for the rich and the poor, and the merchant, and the wise, and the sages. This bodily formation makes no exception for anyone. Whether one is rich or poor, one is always fully possessed with the dukkha of the element aggregate. We have experienced dukkha before, so we should not be discouraged by the dukkha that appears from our exertion. This kind of dukkha is for good results. It is for the supreme result. It is the dukkha of nobility. It is the dukkha for the uprooting of the kilesas, so that we can attain to freedom right within our hearts, so that we do not have to go through the repeated cycle of birth and death, again within the vata chakra. No matter how severe this dukkha might be, we are willing to face it. All that is needed is to have sati, panya, satta, and diligent effort, turning around with this dukkha. We must not withstand and endure dukkha without doing anything, for this will be of no benefit. However much dukkha appears, panya must dig into it. Let's get to see dukkha as pure dukkha, that it is just one form of truth. And let us see it clearly within our heart. With each different part of the body, we must also see it as another kind of truth. We must see it as it is. The citta is the knowingness that exists by itself. Sanya is the thing that arises and ceases, and which supposes that that thing is I, and this thing is mine. Supposes that that thing is sukha, and this thing is dukkha. It deceives us. When we have investigated and seen it truly, the body will then be just the body. Vetana just vetana. Then how can the citta be other than just the citta? The sanya arammana suppositions will then disappear. This is the way of investigating, and this is how truthful and how real it can be. We can call this the four satipatthana, or the four ariya satya. It is all correct, for it is correct within ourselves. Be serious and really exert yourself. Don't relent or become discouraged. I have great concern for all of my fellow practitioners, and that is why I have to give you instruction constantly. Otherwise, the citta will become slack and retarded. You have to arouse your hearts and develop them with the correct way that accords with Dhamma. You have to take up this Dhamma and practice it. Don't relent in your exertion. If you are drowsy, then you have to wash your face. You have to find techniques to overcome this sleepiness. You have to do it the way the practitioners during the time of the Lord Buddha did it. What is the purpose of writing down what they did if it is not for the purpose of teaching us? If we are sitting and we become drowsy, then we have to get up and walk. If we walk and still become drowsy, then we have to follow some of the things that the Savakas did in the past. Some of them went all the way into the water. If one is knee-deep in this water and still cannot get rid of this sleepiness, then one has to go deeper. And if one is still sleepy, then one has to look for some grass, soak it in water, and put it on one's head until one can get rid of the drowsiness. One then investigates Dhamma until attaining to the realization of Dhamma. Listen to that. According to my understanding, I think that during that time, one must be of a very high attainment. But this sleepiness makes no exception of anyone. And that is why the man in this example had to think up these means and techniques with his sati and panya for the sake of deliverance from dukkha. He had to apply these various means and techniques to overcome this drowsiness, like walking into the water and keeping on going deeper and deeper, so long as he still had not got rid of his drowsiness. He did it until he had to take soaking grass and place it on his head. He then investigated and attained to the realization of Dhamma. This is the stage of a very high attainment of the citta, for he did not relent in his exertion. But the body, the element aggregate, felt drowsy and wanted to take a rest. The element aggregate is just the element aggregate. Consider the venerable Sona, who exerted himself until his feet blistered. I am looking from the standpoint of his strenuous exertion and his intense striving. His sati and panya had been turning around in the circle of exertion, doing this relentlessly and ceaselessly, and forgetting about the time. He was so absorbed in walking Jhankama that his feet became blistered. This was not within the bounds of propriety. He was absolutely obsessed and engrossed in a work of investigation and contemplation. This is uttaccha, being overly engrossed in the work of investigation and not taking off time to rest in samadhi. But if one has rested enough in samadhi, then one comes out to do the investigation. And after one has done investigation, then one again takes a rest in samadhi. This would be the correct way of doing it. This is like a workman. When he does his work, he really concentrates all of his effort into the work. But when he becomes tired and hungry, he then takes a rest and feeds himself without being concerned with the work. He takes a rest until he feels comfortable and at ease, and until the body has had enough rest. He then goes out to do some more work. It is the same way with the citta. The investigation, contemplation, and analysis is the work of the citta. The concocting and thinking process, although it might be in the way of panya, is still the work of the citta. The citta can also become tired and exhausted. So it is necessary for it to take a rest in samadhi, which is the state of calm. Here one restrains all activities of the citta. All there is just the knowingness and tranquility right within that state of samadhi. With just that much rest, the citta can become strengthened. After having withdrawn from that state, one then begins to investigate in the way of panya. This is similar to a knife that has been well sharpened, and a workman who has eaten and had enough rest and become strengthened. It is the self-same panya which will now be able to destroy the self-same kilesas. And this can be done very rapidly, which is a big contrast to when one hasn't rested the citta. This is like the workman who has rested and is now comfortable, and whose knife has been resharpened. He is the same workman who was tired and exhausted before, but has now regained his strength. He can now cut that same piece of wood that he was working on before with ease. The panya that has been developed by samadhi is of great fruit and great benefit. This refers to the panya that is being supported by samadhi. It is like a cook who is trying to concoct up a dish and who has all the ingredients ready. He can concoct anything he likes out of them. But if he doesn't concoct anything, then these ingredients will remain as they are. If they are vegetables, then they will just stay vegetables. And if they are chilies, then they will just stay chilies. And meat will just be left as meat. They will remain just meat and vegetables. How can they become stew? It is the same way with samadhi, which will just remain as samadhi if one doesn't use it to become panya. Like all the ingredients for cooking, if one doesn't combine and cook them, then one cannot make any food out of them. They will just remain cooking ingredients and will be just left to go rotten. Then all that one can do is just to throw it away, and it becomes useless. It is likewise with samadhi. One who is infatuated with samadhi and immersed and attached to samadhi will just become rotten right within that state of samadhi. How can this samadhi be the state of deliverance? It is only the support of the heart that can strengthen the heart and make it powerful. Once the heart has attained to samadhi, it will be contented and will not hunger for or hanker after anything. It will be ready for the work of investigation, which it will be able to do very proficiently and efficiently. And this is what it is meant for. Samadhi is not the condition that can uproot the kilesas. It only envelops or restrains the kilesas by rounding them up and making them converge into the citta. It is the support of panya which will then be able to do the work of investigation. This is because the citta that has become full from the state of calm can do the work efficiently. It will not turn into sanya aramana. When we have eaten our food and become full, we can then do our work to the fullest of our capacity. But what is it like for people to be working when they are very hungry? It is very inefficient, and one's temper can arise very quickly. When the heart that investigates does not have any samadhi, it will just go out of the way and turn into sanya aramana and flow along with the world of samsara. Then one cannot come up with any result. Samadhi is therefore a vital dhamma that acts as the support for panya. The panya that has been developed by samadhi is of great benefit and great result. The citta that has been developed by panya will be delivered from all kinds of kilesas. Panya cleanses and washes away all the kilesas found within the citta. But how can samadhi do this work of purification? It is a supportive function. As far as samadhi is concerned, it is just the affair of itself. It is similar to a staircase that has various steps that support one another. Sila is on one level. Samadhi is on another level. And panya is on yet another level. They all do the work of supporting. But on the last step, it is panya that does the work of eliminating all the kilesas. This is the greatest and most supreme treasure. It is the consequence of the work put forth by the practitioner who has exerted fearlessly and been ready to give up his life. This is the result that one goes after. All the dukkha that one has experienced now turns into nourishment or fertilizer, which nurtures the heart and develops it to perfection, thus arriving at Nibbana while one is still alive. You have to be intent and determined. Really set your heart on this practice. We have to develop the citta, following the way that the Lord Buddha taught us. We have to resist and discipline ourselves. Anything that opposes Dhamma is the kilesas. We have to resist until there is nothing to resist. When we have attained to perfection, then there will be no more resistance. Once we have purified the citta, then there will be nothing to resist. We will come to see that all the things that oppose us are just the affairs of the kilesas. When we have arrived at the pure citta, then there will be nothing to oppose us. One will exist without having anything to pull or drag one. This one will have no attraction for anything, and nothing will have any attraction for it. One has now attained to the ultimate freedom. It is as if the world does not exist. Although one is still existing within the world, within the khandhas, it is as if they are not there, because they are no longer involved with one. All there is just the knowingness, which cannot be correctly described. But the one who possesses it has no doubt as to what this knowingness is. This knowingness is not linked or involved with anything. It has no attachment for anything. Nothing can disturb it, nor can anything pierce or hurt it. There is nothing to oppress or control it. It just exists alone by itself, in its own natural state. What is this state like? It cannot be correctly described, but the one who possesses it has no doubt. What is there to pull and attract it? It is the kilesas that attract and pull, that deceive and constantly draw and pull without ceasing. We have to accomplish. We must be heavy-handed. We must not retreat. If we want to be free from dukkha, then we must not be deterred by the dukkha that arises from our exertion and our mastering and subjugation of every kind of kilesa that goes against Dhamma. We have to resist the kilesas, for the kilesas resist Dhamma. This is where we have to contend. This is where we have to face up to the dukkha. This is the dukkha for victory, and there is no damage in that. We have to really put in our effort, and this is where we can really conquer. It is right here. We must not look elsewhere, like in this place or that time. They are only the places of our exertion, where it is conducive to our struggle. But the things that we are going to uproot and eradicate and fight and contend with are right within the citta. This is where we have to struggle. Don't turn elsewhere, but come right into the citta. Rukkamula sena sanam, dwelling under the trees. This is a suitable place for exertion. This is what the Lord taught us to do. But we tend to speculate until we become heedless. We become forgetful of the kilesas that are trampling on and hurting our heart. This is wrong. We have to be real and earnest. Once the citta is freed from all of these things, it is similar to vehicles in space. They are free from any attraction. The pull of the world no longer has any influence over it. This is what space is like. But the space of the citta and the space of Dhamma is like this. It is right within the world and intermingling with it, but it has no attraction for anything, and nor is it attracted by anything. Although the khandhas exist with one, there is no attraction between them and the citta. This is unlike before, when one has to shoulder their burden. One has to shoulder this whole body. This upadana can really cling, and it is a very heavy burden, as it takes the body as I and mine. But once we have investigated and truly realized the truth, then we will let go of the body. We must not go contrary to Dhamma, because then we will be following the kilesas. No matter how hard and difficult it might be, we have to struggle along. We must not retreat. Dhamma goes this way, and this is the way we have to go. We have to resist. Dhamma teaches us not to have affection, so we must not have affection. If there is any infatuation, we have to resist it. We have to overcome and correct the cause of this passion and find out its cause. And if there is hate, then we have to correct this hate. What is the cause or the reason for this hatred? Dhamma does not teach us to have hatred. And that is really the way it is. When the citta has entered into the middle way, going on its natural way, then both love and hatred are parasitic vines that bite on the citta. They are like the parasitic vines that devour the tree that they grow on. They have to depend on the tree for their nourishment. The nature of the kilesas is to devour. They will really suck the sap of the citta and really afflict it with a lot of hardship. They constantly suck on the heart. We have to get rid of them. We have to uproot them until there is nothing left behind. And then we will come to perfect bliss. Then it doesn't matter where one lives. As far as death is concerned, it is just a concept. And while one is still living, from the first moment that one gets up, one just experiences the various sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and touches that have always existed in this world for kalpas and kalpas. They were there before we were born, and they will still be there after we are dead. what can we expect out of them? There is nothing in this world that is supreme or wonderful. If there was anything in this world apart from Dhamma that was supreme and wonderful, then many of the people who are living in this world would already have become supreme and wonderful too. But that is not the way it is. For wherever one goes, one can only see the heap of dukkha. One can see this very clearly. One can see this merely by just looking at it. The domination and oppression of the kilesas within the heart is extremely severe. They drag and draw one away and go against the way of Dhamma by making one following them. If the heart is weak, then it will constantly follow the kilesas. The force of their attraction is extremely great, and that is why we have to develop and accumulate a lot of strength. We have to build up sati and panya to contend with them. Wherever they drag us, we have to pull ourselves back. We have to constantly resist them, and then it can be said that we are opposing them. If we constantly follow them, then it cannot be said that we are combating and fighting against them. For one will then be merely dragged along by the nose. We have to be constantly struggling with them. And we have to keep on doing this until the kilesas become steadily weakened. Then the strength of Dhamma will increase more and more, until one has to dig and search for the kilesas, since they do not seem to appear anymore. This is what is meant by automatic sati and panya, which I discussed earlier on. Once one comes across them, then one has work to do. One has now come across one's opposition. One then has to join combat with them, and one will contend with them without making any retreat until all these enemies are entirely destroyed. Then one begins to search and dig for more, looking for them to find out where they are hiding. That is why the citta at this stage is constantly busy. When one comes across the kilesas, then one has to do battle with them. And when one has vanquished them, then one digs and searches for more. For the kilesas of this level are very subtle, and so there is always work to do. Looking and searching for them is a kind of work. When one comes across the kilesas and contends with them, then this is another form of work. Until everything is totally vanquished, with nothing else left behind, then the work comes to completion. This is Gammatthana, the work of the bhikkhu, the work of the Gammatthana bhikkhu. We have to investigate entirely and totally until we come to full penetration. Then the work comes to an end. This is Usitang Brahmacharyam. One has now accomplished one's task. Na parang itatayati pachanati. There is no further work to be done. Totally gone is the attraction. This force of attraction goes right into the citta. And if there is nothing else to attract, it then attracts the citta. One now becomes attached to oneself. One becomes attached to one's citta. This is the power of the Gilesas, and this is how far they can attract. At first, they will attract this and they will attract that. They will attract by way of sight, sounds, smells, tastes, and touches. When one investigates and steadily clears away all of these attractions, until it comes into the citta, it then attracts the citta. One becomes attached to the citta. The kilesa within the citta is avichara. It now has no other way to go. All that is left is now the citta and avichara that coexist together. One now becomes attached to them because one doesn't know that this is avichara. So one now becomes attracted, attached, and submissive in this point, without oneself being aware of it. Even sati and panya of this level can become of God. Just imagine how subtle the power of this kilesa is. It attracts very subtly, unlike the other kinds of kilesas. It attracts and draws in a very subtle way. This accords with the position of avichara as the ruler of the three realms of existence. One now has to exert until that thing is totally destroyed and there is nothing left behind. Then there will be nothing left to attract. The citta will then no longer be attached to the citta. If there is still attachment to the citta, then this is still not yet deliverance, and one is not yet free from the force of attraction. This is because one is still under the pull of the world, and avichara is the world. But when this has totally disappeared, then that will be the end of the attraction of the world. One will now enter the space of the citta, but one will not fall back down, like the space station Skylab. We have to really vanquish the kilesas. Once the force of attraction is entirely got rid of, then that will be the space of the citta. This space of the citta is comparable to the space of the universe, and it is totally devoid of all forces of attraction. One now truly understands the nature of the citta. When there is nothing inside the citta, then there will be no attraction. One will not be attached to one's citta. The cause of this attachment is the kilesas, and they are why the citta becomes attached to itself. The citta becomes attached to itself, and it is deluded with itself. The citta is conceited of itself. Once the kilesas that deceive one to become conceited have totally vanished, then there is nothing to be conceited about, nothing to shoulder the burden of, and nothing to become attached to. Then it becomes like space, where there is no attraction. And that is how it will be like in the midst of the world of the Khandas. Speaking on a wider scale, this is the world of all living beings. And speaking on a narrower scale, this is the world of the Khandas. They are both the world, but now they do not have any force of attraction. When these conditions manifest themselves, they merely flash and flare on and off. And that is about it, as it is their nature to do so. they don't know any meaning in themselves. This rupa, the body, doesn't know that it is the body. It is only us who give it the name body. And then we become deluded with it. The vedanas of both sukha and dukkha are real according to their nature. They exist as they are. And it is the same way with sanya, sankhara, and vijnana. They each are real. Once the citta becomes real and truthful, then everything is true and real. Then one comes to the insight that everything in this whole world is truthful, but that it is only the citta that is fake, and which makes the whole world fake. It takes hold of everything. But when one understands the truth, then one lets go of these things. It will become like space wherever one lives. This is like existing alone by oneself. This singular existence refers to that singular state of knowingness. This knowingness cannot be correctly described, and regardless of who tries, he would not be able to describe it correctly. But the one who possesses it has no doubt. But it cannot be correctly portrayed. It is beyond description. One just doesn't know how to illustrate it. No matter how one may describe it, it will not conform to it, even though one is not doubtful. One just cannot correctly portray it. We have to really put in our effort. This Savakata Dhamma is genuine and very fresh. It is the Majjhima Patipada, very fresh and very suitable for the eradication of all kinds of kilesas, and at all times. End of Detsana.